Good morning, Jenna Barr. How are you?
Morning. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, haven't seen you in a while.
I know. It's good to have you back in studio in one piece.
Good to be back.
Yeah. Katie, hey there.
Hey.
How you been?
Good.
So we have a really great show today.
Yeah, I'm really pumped. You're like holding out on me. I don't understand why. I feel like... I don't know what's happening. I'm nervous, sweaty. I've Googled this person in the room a few times already.
Well, Katie always can't even fathom why I like this topic so much, but it's something, it's a rabbit hole I go down often with our clients. But we're here today to discuss and review estate planning. And we have with us today our special guest, Kristen Marks, local estate planning attorney here in Pensacola, Florida. Licensed in Florida and Alabama.
Nope.
Oh, I am so sorry. But you went to the University of Alabama.
What a build-up.
You went to the University of Alabama.
Yes, I did. My husband and I met there the first day of orientation of law school.
Oh, my gosh. You would think I'd get that right. Okay, I apologize.
That's okay.
All right.
That's okay.
Terrific estate planning attorney and personal friend of mine. Both you and your husband.
Yes, I think you... were one of the first people that we met when we moved to Pensacola.
How long ago is that?
Wow. Well, we moved here in 95 when we graduated.
Okay.
And I want to say I remember coming over to your house, five little kiddos.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, Katie, I'm sure I met you when you were like no more than knee high.
Wow. Was that out in Tiger Point?
You know, I don't even remember where it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But
okay.
It was
back in the day. I'll be
several
darned. That
wives
was
20 ago.
Years ago. Gosh, lives
really
ago.
Lives. Okay. I feel like
wow. We are.
Which is a great
we're just
segue
going for it.
Into our topic today of estate planning with blended families.
That was so good.
That is so good.
Actually,
somebody
only
planned
two.
This.
All right, the gloves are off.
Well, it applies to so many. Families now, so it is a
it
good
does.
Subject.
Like I said, I really like Andrew. Okay, now I don't know about you.
He puts up with a lot, doesn't he?
Oh, Kristen's great.
Kristen, how long have you been doing this?
Since 95, so 27 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
And had my own practice, My Pink Lawyer, since 08. So 14 years.
Awesome.
And, you know, a lot of people know you as, I mean, talk about some great branding. You know, my
Thank
pink
you.
Lawyer.
Well, that's what I've always said. I don't care if you remember my name, just how to find us.
Yeah.
And if you Google anything close to pink and lawyer, pink and attorney, you're going to find us. But I did find out from a client, do not Google my pink lady because that brings you to an escort service.
Oh, really?
So make sure you throw in there lawyer or attorney.
That is the wrong
What's
service.
The
estate or escort. Well... All right.
You're going to get taken either way. You're going to cough up the
either
big
way,
bucks.
Either way, you're going to get business.
All right.
I could go so many places with this, but I'm just going to bite my tongue.
This is what I get for having three women on
the
show.
Right.
I'm not going to get
for this.
I can leave.
I'm surprised Candy in the newsroom hasn't chimed in just to top it off.
Right.
All right. Yeah, I was going to say something about who leaves whose office more satisfied,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's a good question.
Anyway, all
okay,
right.
But so, mypinklawyer.com. That's awesome.
That's it.
Mypinklawyer.com. And yeah, I mean, you know, we will be sitting there with clients or I'll talk to somebody and I'll say, do you have a will? Do you have... You know, have you completed your estate plan? Yeah, I got it done years ago, maybe decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know we know how long you've been doing it, and they'll say, I'll say who did your estate plan? My pink lawyer. That's not even Kristen Marks, my pink lawyer.
Yeah. Awesome.
So yeah, that's branding for you. That's great. And your husband is doing great. I take it he is fishing.
Yes, I don't know if he's fishing as
right
we
now,
speak,
right.
but yes, he fishes quite
more
frequently.
More likely than not, yeah.
He is fishing in a tournament this weekend with a friend on a friend's boat.
Wow.
But yeah, so he has his own law practice, which hopefully your listeners will never need him. He does criminal defense work.
Right. Okay.
But you can call my pink lawyer if you know someone who gets in trouble, and I'll put you in touch with them.
Yeah.
So.
Excellent. Yeah.
That's good.
All right. And the kids are great. And you all have a new home now south of the border.
We are closing on a second home in Zihuatanejo, Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah. In the Pacific Coast. So south of Puerto Vallarta, north of Acapulco.
Okay.
And it's a quaint little fishing village, which you know is important to half of my family.
Yeah.
And it's just, the people are great. They're laid back. It's just, it's a fun getaway for us.
How did you get acclimated to that part of Mexico? That seems like that's where the Californians go, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we have traveled around Latin America quite a bit with our kids. We love to travel. But Andrew and I, this was our first time going to Zihuatanejo in March. But he had been there as a teenager with his family and always had fond memories. And when we were planning our next vacation, probably last fall, we were thinking about where we're going to go in March. He's like, you know what? I've started reading more again about Zihuatanejo. The fishing's supposed to be great, and I think it's going to be your cup of tea. Hmm. Let's go check it out, because we had started thinking, well, where do we ultimately want to start spending more time?
Right.
And so we started researching it. We booked our tickets, and we got in touch with the realtor, and I started doing my research and seeing what was available for sale. And you know how that goes. We're just going to look. But we found an amazing deal, a 3-bedroom, 3-bath, they call it a villa, think condo.
Okay.
But overlooking the Pacific for $199.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get
out of here.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? I'm moving today.
Yes.
That's it. Moving in with you.
So, but everything takes a long time to close. So we haven't officially closed, but, you know, every week it's like, get us more paperwork. So it's in process. Mm-hmm. And we're actually going back in a couple of weeks for a 2-week vacation. We won't have closed yet, but go scope it out.
Yeah.
And then in December, we'll be back with the kids.
Wow. Is it? Okay, a couple things I want to interject with. So our friend Jacques texted in. So that location is the beach at the end of the Shawshank Redemption?
It is. Well, they talk about it in Shawshank Redemption, but the ending scene was not actually filmed there. That was filmed on the Caribbean coast of Mexico.
Andy Dufresne.
Stop it. Oh my goodness.
It's by Morgan Freeman.
But that's how people know the name.
That is awesome. Yep. Okay, so I want to interject real quick and ask you. So you've been doing this for 27 years, you said, right?
Yes.
27 years.
So
how important.
Sound so old.
Well, no. No, but the experience there, but also you still have joy in what you do as well. I see it.
I do.
And then talking about, you know, planning to have a place to get away as well, mm-hmm. you know. So my question is how has getting away and taking time for your family, your husband, your health, your mental health helped you thrive even more in your business?
Well, if you don't do those things, I think anybody will get burnt out with whatever that they're doing.
Right.
So for us, it's always been important to us as a couple and as a family to take regular vacations, and we've just always been the type that we want to go someplace that's a little out of the ordinary, right? Mm-hmm. Makes you think, kind of an adventure vacation.
You want to have some adventure, yeah.
Right, not necessarily like, you know, we're going to go jumping out of planes, not that type of adventure,
right.
Just foreign country, have to speak or attempt to speak a different language, different money. You know, I mean, like and culture being different, and you know, food being different.
So break up your brain, break up the ordinary, not the mundane, but the ordinary schedule, and go on an adventure.
Exactly. And then for us, as we were thinking, okay, where's some place that we want to spend more time? As you know, at some point we'll retire, but you know, we're still both in our early 50s, so we have we have some time.
Yeah.
But it was important to us. Well, Andrew speaks Spanish. I'm learning. So I think it was important to him to be someplace where they speak Spanish.
Cool.
And for us, someplace that's easy to get to.
Right.
So going to Zihuatanejo, United flies from Pensacola to Houston, direct from Houston to Zihua.
Wow.
So you just change Very planes cool. once. So we can leave at 7 in the morning and be boots on the ground there by 12:30 p.m. And they're in the same
wow.
time zone,
Wow.
believe it
yeah.
or not, even
That's
though they're on
good.
The Pacific coast.
I like it. It's
yeah.
inspirational to me.
It yeah. is.
It's really cool. Thank
it
you
really
for that.
Is. You're welcome.
I know before we get into this subject, because I don't want to take over either, so Bob Burgee's still the host here. But
has so many questions.
So we do have questions coming in already.
Okay.
That we want to get to. Just talking about, we are going to discuss estate planning, also blended family estate planning. But is there a specific wealth threshold that somebody should meet and reach in order to start estate planning, or should you just go ahead and start it at any time?
What a great question.
It is a great question.
I want to hear what you have to say about
well,
it.
Well, I was going to say, no, there is no wealth threshold. To me, you should always have a plan in place no matter what type of assets that you have, even if you are a new high school grad going off to college. You should, if you have a bank account, which you probably do, this is a super simple estate planning technique. Go into the bank and sign a POD, payable on death beneficiary form, for your account. If you should die, who do you want getting your $100 or, in my son's case, $10,000 in the bank?
Yeah.
Right? So, So a lot of people, I think, mistakenly think, oh, to have an estate plan, I need all of these fancy trusts and documents to put into place. No, an estate plan can be as simple as using a tool like a beneficiary form.
Right.
So any type of financial account, you should be thinking, okay, if I die, who do I want to get this money and how am I going to get it to them without them having to pay a bunch of money to access it? And then also just in estate planning, I'll lump in there some other documents I think everyone needs, if even if you're an 18-year-old, is a financial durable power of attorney and medical directives. If you are laid up in the hospital, who do you want paying your bills and who do you want making medical decisions for you?
Right.
Because it's not guaranteed who's going to be making those choices
That's
once
right.
you're a legal adult.
Right. Wow. And it's and although that really isn't estate planning, their advanced directives, and they empower folks to act on your behalf. That's almost life planning.
Correct.
But
it's stuff that you and I talk about all the time.
There is no
clients.
Estate plan without
That's
durable
right.
powers of attorney and appointment of healthcare surrogate.
We should start shifting the conversation to calling it life planning.
Do you know?
Right.
Do you
Adulting.
Know, I got called, I did get called out once, you know, because, you know, a client basically said, you know, that's not estate planning. That has nothing to do with, you just told me that that power of attorney is null and void when I die. That's true.
That's true.
It all shifts to the last will and testament. But very important documents. And we, you know, we generically call them estate planning documents, I think. And, hey, that works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is, but you're right. I think it does give the misperception that you have to have a lot of wealth. Like, I have to have a, quote, estate
right.
before I need to worry about this.
Right.
Probably every listener here owns something,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a
Dead.
Pet that you care who's right. going to care for that pet if something happens
right.
to you.
A car.
Or your stuff.
Yeah.
We all have stuff. Some of us more than others. I'm not going to call out anyone. Listener who may be listening right now, but you
Andrew.
Know who you are.
Yeah. You might be a hoarder.
Yeah. I was about to say that.
If you'd like my hoarder,
raise your hands.
Nothing yes. wrong with stuff.
Are you the listener? Where are you?
No,
talking?
No, I know who she's talking to.
You don't even know who I'm talking about.
That is too
but
funny.
She knows who I'm talking about.
Oh, really?
About.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm listening right now.
I'll tell you though, I think that less stuff also, I just read an article yesterday actually on this, where do you really need that looking ahead to when your children or whoever has to take care of your stuff after you pass away? And the stories, oh my goodness, it was sad. And I've even dealt with it personally, and it's overwhelming. You end up like with a migraine for 2 weeks trying to deal with it.
I think there are some people that accumulate so much stuff, and then they want it. In theory, they want to downsize, but it's just overwhelming to even plan to do that. Like, they wouldn't even know how to get started. And then I think there are other people that accumulate a lot of stuff, and that is their security blanket. Mm-hmm. They really like looking around and seeing all of their stuff.
Right.
And if they need something, they know they have it in the garage and they know where they can find it.
Right.
I am just the opposite. I look around and it truly gives me like the jitters if I am in a space where there is a lot of stuff.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I'm the same way, Kristen. And also, like, on the subject, because we just talked about taking care of your mental health, you know, so you're successful. But imagine just being able to come home and you don't have to reorganize 42,000 different things and piles and boxes and dusting and this and that. You just like are free. Your brain is free to relax, right?
Exactly.
So you can focus on work at work and come home and be able to enjoy life, whether it's going paddleboarding or rollerblading, whatever you fancy, right? So you can let it go. But it's also mental illness a lot of times, and we're talking about it more and more. People who have had tough upbringings and had nothing, were in foster care, moving place to place. But there are resources for that and getting help, because it doesn't mean it's a good thing and it's an excuse to just hold on to it. It's not going to help you throughout life. So it's a good call for everybody to just take a step back, order the dumpster.
Right. I mean, your stuff.
Or Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, make some money.
Or hire somebody to sell it.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
If it's overwhelming to you to do it.
I have seen living estate sales. Have you ever been to one of those? And I felt really uncomfortable with the person like sitting outside in the garage area. I'm like, I'm just going
to
go ahead
have
and
to
buy
leave.
Your... I know.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, I want to get rid of stuff, but I would physically just have to leave. When we moved this last time we've been downsizing multiple times since our kids have gotten older. Mm-hmm. And this last time we moved, again, downsizing again, and I had to break down for 2 months and rent a storage unit, which I am just anti-storage unit.
Oh,
if
gosh.
You have to rent a freaking storage unit, you have too much stuff. But
she's
I had
my spirit
to do it.
Animal.
But I had to for a couple of months just because we had to be out of one place and whatever. I ran out of time. Well, I went one weekend and I finally pulled everything else that I wanted out of there. But there was still a lot of stuff in there. And I told my husband, bless his heart, I said, okay, we have to be out of the storage unit in 2 weeks. I have pulled everything else that I want. Go and do with it as you wish. I don't even want to know. Please do not tell me what you do with that stuff, because I'll be it'll make me anxious to think, oh my gosh, those photographs are, I see, now this is really bad. But yeah, I mean, how many photographs do you really need, right? I have a lot of photographs, but I don't need thousands and thousands of photographs. So anyway.
So you no longer have the storage unit.
We have not have the storage unit. I don't know what Andrew did with everything in the storage unit, nor do I want to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is for between him and the Lord. That is so good. Hey, here's another question. I heard you guys were going to be talking about blended family estate planning. Do you meet with the families all in one room? How do you usually work a process like that? I know it's like about 10:26, Bob, so we can also continue this into the next segment.
You know, I think, certainly you meet with the principals of the family, usually the husband and wife. As far as all of the members of the blended family, no, I don't think that's the way it works.
No. I would be meeting with whoever my client is going to be.
Right.
So whether that is the married couple of the blended family or just one of the couple, if their assets are separate. Mm-hmm. But it gets very sticky. Well, think of it this way. Your kids do not get a vote.
Right.
Right? We can talk through, and I'm we do have a lot of conversations about, okay, well, practically speaking, if we do what you want to do, how is this going to play out? How do you foresee it playing out with your kids and their relationships with one another and all of that? Again, just to think it through, but not because we're trying to change your mind or give them a vote in what you want to see happen.
Right. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about estate planning in general. What are the critical documents, Kristen, of an estate plan?
So we always start with the end in mind. So there are certain documents that we touched upon earlier, life planning type of documents that we're always going to get to as well and keep up to date, your financial durable power of attorney, your medical directives. Okay, then, but where I really start is, what assets do you have? Real estate, financial accounts, life insurance, retirement, your stuff. And who do you want to give those assets to? And then we may go down a trail that leads to, well, okay, you don't want to leave anything to your spouse because she has ample other assets. This is a second marriage. And you just tell me whenever we're doing commercial.
I'm good.
He'll cut you right off. And we may have a conversation of, okay, well, you may think she has ample other assets and she doesn't want any of your stuff or any of your money, but if you don't have a marital agreement, a prenuptial agreement in place, then under Florida law, a surviving spouse has guaranteed inheritance rights. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what those might be. Mm-hmm. So our conversation always starts off with, let me get a handle on what your situation looks like, family-wise, what you own, how it's owned, ownership. And then we'll transition into a discussion about, okay, what do you want to see happen with these assets? Once I know what you want to see happen with these assets and what your family situation is like, then we can start talking about the exact planning tools to put into place to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of planning tools, right, Bob, at our disposal to make these things happen.
Right.
Right.
Beneficiary designations, wills, trusts. Joint ownership. Right. So we have a lot, business agreements.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot that we can tie together to make sure that your assets transition to who you want them to at the correct time.
Right. So if, and we're talking about blended families, heck of a thing to start with, but you know, that's great. That's great. We'll just jump right in. In the absence of a prenup, and you would call that the forced marital share. Is that, and that's typically, what is that?
30% plus guaranteed homestead rights,
right.
And then some other rights like a family allowance,
right.
Stuff, a certain amount of your personal property, personal tangible property.
Right, and suffice it to say, exceedingly more difficult, the planning with blended families. But all the, you know, I think it's... It makes it even more important, though, to do the planning. I know we have to go to a news break here, and we will be back in a few minutes. Thank you. We're joined by Kristen Marks, estate planning attorney, My Pink Lawyer here in Pensacola, Florida. Stay tuned.
All right, Bob, we've got more with Bob Burgee and Candy Burgee, as well as Kristen Marks. But Candy, you got a news update?
That's right. Yeah, we're going to go over the arrest report of Dr. Charles Stamatolis. It's a good one.
We're back with our special guest, Kristen Marks, My Pink Lawyer, here in Pensacola, Florida. And Kristen is an estate planning attorney. And one of the questions we wanted to ask you, Kristen, coming back from the break, how did you become an estate planning attorney as opposed to any other kind of lawyer?
Well, great question. I think when you get out of law school, you practice... You do whatever your boss tells you to do, right? Mm-hmm. You go to work for a law firm and they have a need someplace and that's what you end up doing. So I was fortunate to start working with Jim Chase in town, great mentor, had a small law firm at the time and did all kinds of law, general practice. But what he really needed me for was writing appellate briefs for his family law cases. So that's what I started off doing.
Okay.
And then I started shadowing him on all of his appointments for the first 2 years. And so I got a real good sampling of family law cases and estate planning cases. And there was another attorney practicing in there at the time who handled probate and guardianship cases. So I got to learn some of that as well, and some business law stuff and whatever. Well, after a couple of years of doing family law, helping him with family law, I said, Jim, I just can't do this anymore. This is not my cup of tea. It's nobody's ever happy, and it's very contentious, and those cases, they just never go away.
Right.
Right? I mean, people are always taking their exes back to court for child support or alimony issues, whatever. And he's like, well, you know what? That's okay. I like doing this. I'm perfectly happy turning over all of our estate planning and probate and guardianship cases to you. Go for it. And so that's how I fell into this.
Wow.
And I really like more of a transactional practice like
right.
this. So Andrew, my husband, and I joke, you know, he's in the courtroom all the time. Mm-hmm. And I said, I could just never do what you do. I would be a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
And he's like, but I would be bored to tears doing what you do. And it's true.
Right.
He couldn't just sit there. It's very paperwork driven, very detail oriented, keeping up with what clients own and all of that. But that's how I fell into it. And I guess I'm fortunate that I really gelled with it. I really found my niche.
Yeah. And it's actually changing so much. It's changed so much during our careers. With, you know, the federal estate tax exemption.
Remember when it was $600,000?
Yes. Yeah. I was looking the year that I was born. Well, let's not even go there. But the year I graduated from high school,
the year you were born.
The year I graduated from high school, the federal estate tax exemption was $161,000.
Oh my gosh!
And that includes
life insurance.
Yes,
people.
Yes.
Wow.
And what we're talking about is how much you can die with.
Before the federal estate tax.
Yeah.
I'll never forget a conversation I had with my dad. Smart guy, doctor. And I remember saying to him, talking to him, this is back, you know, because the federal estate tax exemption was $600,000 from 1987 to 1997, and then it was shot out of a cannon. And now it's like, what is it, $12,060,000 with portability, which is 24,120,000 husband and wife. So, and we'll talk a little bit about that hopefully before the show's over, but I said to my dad, you know, you're going to have a federal estate tax. He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, your estate's going to be over $600,000, pal. And he's like, so, you know, and I told him there's a federal estate tax, and at the time, Kristen, I think the minimum rate was 45%. 45%. It is a confiscatory tax. And the highest rate, 55%. So anyway, my dad says to me, now let me get this straight. This money that I've made over my lifetime,
and
that
I paid taxes on,
okay, when I made it, and then I invested it, okay, and when I pulled it out or when I made money on that money, you know, your passive income, you know, income from IRAs, you know, I paid income on that. I paid taxes on that again. You're telling me that when I die, I've got to pay taxes again? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, no way. And I said, way. And he just couldn't believe it. And I was like, yeah, that's the way it works. Now, of course, you know, for most of us, there is no federal estate tax liability because the exemptions are so high. However, in 2025, the what is it?
Tax, 26 maybe.
Is it? The last day of 2025 is
okay.
How long it's good.
Gotcha.
But the first day of 2026, it comes back to what is it?
Five million
is the
per
federal
person.
Yeah.
With portability.
Still.
So that's 10 million.
Yeah.
For a married couple.
Yeah.
So
but
that will catch a lot more people then. But there's
still a huge chunk
that it's never going to come into play for.
Right.
Right.
And certainly, you know, not a topic for the masses, you know, but it is interesting because it has bounced all over the place, including one year, I think, 2011.
There
or 2010.
None.
There were 2011.
Yes,
that is the year George Steinbrenner died.
Exactly.
And you know, a billionaire, not a penny of federal estate tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. But anyway, so I think what happens in most cases, and Katie, you started talking about this. We meet with folks, and we don't ask them if they have a will. Do you have a plan, an estate plan? And you know, they may say, "Well, I have a will." What else do you have? And that, you know, that opens the conversation to some more discovery. And so it's not just a will. It's other estate planning documents. And we talk about the last will and testament. And I think you said we start at the end. You know, how
Correct.
Does it all end?
And then we work backwards. Once we know what the plan is supposed to look like, mm-hmm. then we work backwards from there. Okay, what are the different planning tools we can put into place to make that happen with the least amount of expense and headaches for your family in the future?
Right.
So one thing that I'll mention, although you probably were going to get to this, with a will, mm-hmm. I have, and I'm sure your clients are the same way, a lot of people mistakenly think, oh, if I have a will, my estate's going to avoid probate. No. It's the opposite. Absolute opposite. So the first question is, do you have assets that might have to go through probate? And we can talk about what those assets might be. If you have assets that might go through probate, and if you have a will, the will doesn't avoid probate. What a will does is it provides written instructions from the grave, from you to the probate judge. Judge, this is who I want to inherit my assets that are going through probate, and this is the person that I nominate to put in charge of making that happen.
Right.
But it doesn't avoid probate.
Right.
And a lot of people also mistakenly think if it's documented in my will, then that is what's going to happen.
Exactly.
That's not true either.
Yeah.
Not necessarily true either.
And I want to talk about you. You have a nice way of describing how assets pass at death. You talk about the different buckets that assets live in.
Correct.
And, you know, starting with, you know, and I always share with our clients, you know, the most powerful form of transferring assets at death is by title. And, you know, and look, we have clients that think, I'm going to get all my estate planning done that way, through beneficiary designation and titling. And I want to talk about, you know, to take us through the buckets. But, you know, every now and then, you know, we have a client and say, I just don't think I need a will. I you know, I've got all this retirement money. I got some annuities. I've got life insurance. They all have beneficiary designations. The house is titled jointly with, you know, with me and the missus. And, you know, I just don't see a probate estate and you know, any need to have a will. And that may be close to true, but it's never entirely true. And you get, you know, you dig a little deeper, you know, the cars, because both people didn't want to go down to the DMV. You know, you've got, you know, individually titled assets. And you know, when you get down to it, there's always some sort of probate estate, typically. And I always tell our folks that, you know, you may not need a will as much as you think, but you still need one. And the reason is it puts somebody in charge, somebody to pick up after that power of attorney lapses and you're no longer with us, somebody you have named to serve as your personal representative here in the state of Florida to settle your estate. And that's very important. Or the court's going to find somebody, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So if there is a reason to open a probate when someone dies, if you don't have a will that nominates who that person should be, then a court who doesn't know you or your family or the family dynamics, they're bound by going through the statutes, and there's a hierarchy of who they have to appoint. So obviously having a will is better than not having a will, because if a probate is needed, you at least have a plan to show the judge from the grave that this is what I want to see happen.
Right.
So if nothing else, I tell clients that having a will, if the goal is to avoid probate and they are hiring me to put together a plan to make that happen, I'm going to have them sign a will, but I may tell them, look, if all things stay exactly the same as they are right now, your estate should not have to go through probate, but at least we have a will as a backup plan in case we forget something or your circumstances change in the future and a probate becomes necessary.
Right. All right. So take us through the different buckets that I've teed you up with.
So everything you can possibly own, think of it as being or housed in one of four different buckets. Three of these buckets all avoid probate. One of the buckets does not. Which one of these is not like the other, right? Okay. So the first bucket that avoids probate are assets that are jointly owned with somebody else with rights of survivorship. Typically, assets owned by a married couple, there is an automatic right of survivorship there between the couples. I call it last man standing wins. Husband dies, wife doesn't have to do anything. She continues to own all of those jointly owned assets. But it doesn't have to be with the spouse. You can have co-ownership with another person so long as it specifically denotes that it's with rights of survivorship. If you own a piece of property with your child and there isn't that magic language on there with rights of joint tenants with rights of survivorship, then the presumption is because you are not married to that person, there is no right of survivorship. And you own half, they own half. When you die, your half does not automatically pass to that surviving co-owner. Okay, so that first bucket are jointly owned assets with rights of survivorship. Now, when both of those joint owners die, now that asset is no longer in that bucket, right? Because we have no living owner.
Right.
And it will shift over to a different bucket at that point. But the second bucket that avoids probate are assets where there are beneficiary designations on file. Think financial accounts. You can designate beneficiaries when you die on banking accounts, retirement accounts, life insurance, brokerage accounts. You can even have beneficiary designations on file for real estate using a tool that we call a ladybird deed in Florida. So think of that as the equivalent of signing a beneficiary form for real estate. You continue to own it while you're alive, but when you die, the deed says when the owner dies, it automatically passes to
whoever you've named.
Katie Burgee.
Right.
Right. Okay, so that's bucket two that also avoids probate, beneficiary designations. Bucket three would be any type of asset that is owned by an entity, such as a living revocable trust, or even an irrevocable trust, or an LLC, where the document of the trust or the LLC designates what happens to that asset upon your death. So that is a third way to avoid probate. So assets owned by a living trust, which is a common estate planning tool that we use. I don't recommend it all the time, but it is a common technique to pass along assets without a probate, so long as we have gone to the trouble of putting assets and retitling them inside of the trust.
Right.
And that's, I know, a biggie that you guys see, that people pay all this money for a trust and then they don't put anything in the trust.
Right.
And then it's just a really expensive document that they paid for.
Right.
And then the fourth bucket is the everything else. So if you have assets that are not in buckets 1, 2, or 3 that avoid probate, then it's in bucket 4, which means when you die, that asset or account will have to go through probate in order to get to the to another person. So think a piece of real estate that's just in your name. No ladybird deed tied to it, no beneficiary, no co-owner with a right of survivorship, or a bank account where you did not sign a beneficiary form,
right.
Or a life insurance policy where your named beneficiary died before you.
Right.
And now we're back to no beneficiary on file. So that's the catch-all, the everything else. And for that probate bucket, your assets are either going to pass according to state law if you do not have a will, or they will pass to the people that you have designated in your will if you have one. Mm-hmm. Again, the will doesn't avoid probate of those assets, mm-hmm. but at least you are designating in advance who should inherit those assets when you die.
Right.
And a lot of clients come to me and a planning goal, which is one of the things that we talk about before they even come in the door, a planning goal for a lot of my clients are, I want to avoid probate.
Yeah.
So we talk about what probate is because they might have just heard the word bandied about,
right.
And they don't even know what it means or why they would want to avoid it. So we talk about that. And sometimes once we know what the end goal is and we talk about all the buckets. I don't necessarily bring up the buckets, but
yeah.
In general, that's where the discussion that mm-hmm. we're having. Sometimes at the end of the day, a living trust tends to be a more expensive planning tool to use, where for their financial situation, it's just not in the cards, and that's okay. And right. I like to tell clients, look, your kids are going to be lucky to get whatever they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have to pay some money and jump through some hoops to get it into their name, that's okay too.
Right.
So don't feel guilty
yeah.
that you may not want to spend the resources on some of these other planning techniques to get your assets where they want to go.
Yeah.
We never make anyone feel bad, right? We always have more than one option on the table.
That's right.
And we always talk about pros and cons.
Yeah. And the probate, just became a really bad word, okay? And the average person that you talk to wants to avoid probate almost at all costs, okay? The nice thing, I've seen this happen before, during the estate settlement process, those assets that did go through probate provided a little bit of a cooling off period mm-hmm. because it is not instant, you know,
right.
Like a beneficiary designation, like jointly titled property or property mm-hmm. with a TOD or POD designation. That is pretty immediate or can be, but, assets passing through probate and the negatives associated with that, probably a bit overblown.
Yep. I think some of it is.
Yeah.
I will bite my tongue.
Well.
Let's just say there's other players involved with a probate. So depending on who those players are, it can help facilitate.
Exactly.
Or it can make it much more complicated than it needs to be.
Right. Right. I remember we had a client one time, and the personal representative was out of town, and it was the sister of the deceased, and it was a second marriage, and of course this gentleman named his sister to serve as personal representative, but the nice thing about it was. Kind of had to wait for her to come into town, mm-hmm. At least for the probate assets. There was plenty that passed, you know, by beneficiary designation. But it took a while, and I will say this, she took her own sweet time. But it really allowed for some things to take place that needed to take place with the family getting together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And and, you know, sorting things out, because there are a lot of moving parts, and sometimes there's some assets that possibly want to be purchased by certain family members mm-hmm. from the estate, and there's an offset, and it just, you know, it just afforded this time. And now look, I would say most of us, you know, want to avoid probate, and I'm certainly in that group, but I've seen it where it's not the end of the world. How's that?
That's right. That's yeah. right. And some people may hear about these buckets and think, like what you just mentioned, Bob, well, why wouldn't I just have everything joint with rights of survivorship? Or why wouldn't I put beneficiaries on everything? Well, it really depends on who your intended recipients are of these assets. Mm-hmm. For example, okay, if every financial account can have beneficiaries, let's say you're married and you have minor kids. Okay, and you want everything to go to your spouse, but you want your kids to ultimately inherit when right. you're both gone. Well, you're not going to name minor children on a beneficiary form, because if you die and they inherit, the financial institution is not going to cut a check to a five-year-old, right? They're going to make...
The parent will be the...
Well, or whoever the legal guardian
right.
is will have to make a claim for that money, and that will require that person, even if it's the parent, mm-hmm. to go to court to be appointed legal guardian and to make a claim for the money. And then guess what? Then the court oversees that money every year
right.
until the 18th birthday.
Hey, we're cutting you off. Hey, thanks everyone for joining us. It's been another week. It's been another week, and it's good seeing everybody. Kristen Marks, My Pink Attorney, My Pink Lawyer, thank you for joining us today.
Just don't call me My Pink Lady.
All right, no, not My Pink Lady. All right, thanks everyone for joining us. We'll see you next week. Local Talk in the morning.